We're at the 2018 Oklahoma FFA convention, and the FFA are very excited to have the number two man at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Deputy Secretary Stephen Sinski. Mr. Secretary, thank you for joining us here for a few minutes. And, you know, you've obviously had a great career in agriculture before you came to the department, and you've had a lot of involvement down through the years with these Blue and Gold Jackets, I know.
It sure has been, and I've worn one of those blue and gold jackets as well, and that's really one of the key things that I recognize, and I'm so passionate about FFA because I recognize what a great training ground it is for tomorrow's leaders. And that is one of the wonderful things about FFA that does such a great job of training our future scientists, our future farmers, our future ranchers, our future nutritionists, engineers that we need in agriculture. And that's why I'm so passionate about it, but I know what a great job that FFA does.
Now, there's talk within the Farm Bill debate, and there's actually a new position being perhaps established to coordinate a little bit more between the department and youth organizations like FFA. Is that something you think is a good idea?
We certainly do think that it's great to have that kind of coordination, and we have really been stepping up our game under Secretary Perdue, have really tried to reach out. We struck a memorandum of understanding about 9 months ago with National FFA to try to increase those kind of interactions where we can have departmental officials be sure to visit and to reach out to speak to state FFA conventions like I'll be doing here today, and to increase the interaction, because once again, we recognize that these are the future leaders of American agriculture that we're going to need. We want them to be involved in the agriculture industry, whether that is in production agriculture, mm-hmm. back on the farm or the ranch, or in agribusiness. As scientists, we're going to need them if we're going to be successful.
What sort of a message do you have for when you go to the general session here in a little bit, what sort of a message are you going to try to impart to these several thousand FFA members?
I think my message is just to continue on the road that they're on. I mean, they've already stepped up and they've already shown that they're leaders, just the fact that they're here at this convention and that they're passionate about the future of agriculture and the future of the food and ag industry. And my message to them is just to continue on with that passion, that there's great opportunities within the agriculture industry. I know we at the department, of course, are passionate. We'd love to have as many of these young people as possible seeking careers at USDA, whether that is working as a scientist for the Agriculture Research Service, working as veterinarians for our Food Safety and Inspection Service or our Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, commodity graders, whether it is working as agriculture economists, or maybe there'll be an agriculture attaché that's working overseas in foreign markets trying to promote our exports and bring down market access barriers. We need these young people to be involved if we're going to be successful for U.S. agriculture.
So many things going on in the world of agriculture right now, and might just touch base on a couple of those with you today. One is the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard. You've had a lot of working knowledge of that from coming in from the soybean industry. USDA not necessarily directly involved with some of the oversight compared to, say, the EPA, but yet I know you've had some conversations the agency has in working with Mr. Pruitt and trying to make sure that agriculture's interests are protected, the farmers that are involved in trying to provide the biofuels.
That's correct. And we recognize that the Renewable Fuel Standard is an important, you know, law that's been passed by Congress and sets the volumes of renewable fuels that are to be used in our fuel supply. And, you know, the president has been clear that he supports the Renewable Fuel Standard. We've been working with EPA to try to make sure that that it is implemented as Congress intended and as the president has directed there. You're absolutely right that any kind of policy like that is not without its tensions. We have had some of those from the refining industry that have been concerned about the high price of renewable identification numbers or RINs that are used to show compliance. Primarily, those are the merchant refiners who don't have their own blending capabilities, and so they have to go out to the market and buy those. But then we also have the pressure from the producers, the biofuel producers and the the farmers that are producing the renewable fuels that want to make sure that we're using as much as is established under the law. And so there's we've been working with EPA. We have been concerned about the large number of waivers that have been granted by the EPA that have effectively reduced the volume obligations under the renewable fuel standard quite considerably. And so that's something that we're working with both the White House and Administrator Pruitt on that.
Well, you've got a lot of your producer groups that are really very, very concerned about that as far as the reduction in the gallons effectively that are going to be able to be sold into the fuel industry. Is this something, can USDA be an advocate for agriculture in this conversation?
We certainly have been, and we've been advocating to the White House, to the President, and with EPA that, you know, the importance of the renewable fuel standard as a source of demand for agriculture products is so important. And we already know that we have commodity prices that are down around 50% from what they were several years ago. We have farm income that's down, and that we need every source of demand that we have. There's a lot of anxiety out there, and as you know, on the trade side of things. And so the renewable fuel standard is a domestic source of demand that is using our commodities to provide renewable fuels here in the U.S. market, and we want to make sure that that is not undermined because it does have, by doing so, if we aren't supporting the renewable fuel standard, it has negative effects on prices, and farmers really can't take that right now.
You mentioned trade. Big issue, obviously, for agriculture, and a lot of concern with all the things going on regarding tariffs and trying to deal with the Chinese especially. Heard Greg Dowd, the chief ag negotiator for USTR, just this last week say that effectively agriculture, with all the things identified within agriculture for potential tariffs, we're kind of at the tip of the spear when it comes to all this trade talk right now. How does USDA weigh in to make sure that we're seeing the needs met for agriculture, trying to address these major concerns?
Yeah, and we've been very clear. The Secretary has been very clear. All of us at USDA have been working with our counterparts from all the various executive branch agencies, with the White House, with the President, and talking about the importance of agriculture trade to farmers and ranchers. You know, on average, we have around 20% of our production is exported overseas. For some industries, it's much, much higher. For the wheat industry, for the soy industry, and a lot of different industries, cotton industry, it is so much higher than 20%. And so farmers really depend on those outside markets. And while we understand some of the need to make sure that we're addressing the unfair trade practices of some of the other countries, we want to make sure that farmers and ranchers aren't bearing the brunt, because as Greg and you have just stated, that many times it is agriculture that's on the point of that retaliation spear that countries use to try to get back at us. And so we've been talking about the importance of trade. We want to make sure that we have good trade agreements. We've been working to make sure that we have a successful NAFTA renegotiation, making some improvements there. But essentially, we want to make sure that we're not doing any harm, that the NAFTA continues, because the NAFTA agreement has been a really great agreement for U.S. agriculture. There's some other areas of the agreement that the President and the trade representative are trying to rebalance, but we hope and think that we're going to be successful in that regard, but we want to make sure that agriculture, those gains that we've had on our increasing our exports to both Canada and Mexico, and that market access is retained. On China, certainly we know that China has not been playing by the rules when it comes to intellectual property. We know that there's forced licensing that companies have to do. They have to take on Chinese partners over there. We have Chinese companies that are essentially many times stealing their intellectual property. And so the President has been very clear that he's not going to stand for that any longer. We hope that China will come to the table and be willing to address our concerns on intellectual property. Right now, China has threatened to retaliate against a host of U.S. products. They've already taken action on sorghum. They've threatened it on pork, on soybeans, on a number of other commodities. But our hope is that they're going to come to the table later this week, where we have our Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, is going to be going over there along with the Trade Ambassador, the Commerce Secretary, and the advisor to the President for Economic Affairs, Larry Kudlow.
And any ideas on how we might be able to help those grain sorghum producers hit with this 178% tariff?
That's something that we've been very much committed to. We've had some really good discussions with our sorghum producers and the association representing those producers to see how we can be helpful at USDA. The president has said he's not going to allow our farmers and ranchers to bear the brunt of retaliation that some of our trade partners might do. We've been keeping, you know, those cards pretty close to our vest right now, because we don't want to signal to China or others what we might do, but we've certainly been working with them, and we're going to support them.
Finally, Farm Bill. You don't want to get too far into the weeds. We're just really starting the process. I know you're pleased to see the House Ag Committee be able to start moving the bill forward. That's important to at least get started.
It is, and we had at the department have released a number of principles that we want both the House and the Senate Farm Bill to reflect, and so we've been working very closely with both the House and the Senate as they are drafting their Farm Bill. While we're there to offer guidance and support and analysis, it really, the Farm Bill is being written by Congress. They're the ones that are the ones that pass that. But we're pleased that the House Agriculture Committee has started that process and has gotten it out of committee. Next step is to the House floor. And the Senate, from some of the comments that are making, they're not far behind. And so I think we're going to see a lot of action. Our hope is certainly that Congress can develop a bipartisan Farm Bill that can have the support can be signed by the president.
One thing, a couple things within the bill itself that it looks like they're moving toward. One, in conservation, looks like maybe a sunsetting of the Conservation Stewardship Program, or CSP, putting those funds toward EQIP. Is that something that makes a lot of sense to you?
Well, we have been working with the committee on that. One of the things that we have heard on the Conservation Stewardship Program, the CSP program, and certainly we've heard this as we've administered that program, is that the rules are pretty complex, and it is hard for producers to comply. So we've been working, you know, we're interested in working how we can simplify that. The House has chosen to combine that, basically, and roll it into the EQIP program, which has a lot of support among producers as well. And so I think we're willing to get there, however, that kind of simplification and a program that works for farmers. To put conservation on the ground, we think it's important that, you know, one of our principles is that, you know, one of the best uses of the conservation dollars is to put it on working lands. We do have some land retirement programs and through the Conservation Reserve Program, but we think the greatest conservation efforts can also occur on working lands, and how can we incentivize farmers to put those practices and ranchers to put those practices on the ground.
The one bit of new money that Mr. Conaway has seemingly come up with his proposal that came out of the committee was for an FMD vaccine bank. How does USDA, as you know, kind of look at the possibility of that happening? How do you get your arms around really getting that implemented to the benefit of our pork and beef producers primarily?
And I know that's been a big priority for the pork and the beef industries, the livestock industry, and certainly we recognize what the threat that a foot and mouth disease outbreak would have would be very, very negative for our industry. And so we think that we do need to have the ability to respond. We've been working with the committees on, you know, what is the best way for that response. Is it to have a massive vaccine bank? You know, the jury is still out on that, but we're working very closely with the committees and with those industries.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity. Alrighty.